Welcome to Ojibwe Stories, Gaga Nunanada. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. Our guest today is Larry and Mick Smallwood, who grew up in Ajimoog, the Lake Lena district of Mille Lacs. He has worked as a language instructor for the Minneapolis Public Schools, Neosheng School, the Leech Lake Tribal College, and the University of Minnesota Duluth. Since 1999, he has served as the Director of Language and Culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. It's wild rice season in Minnesota and Wisconsin, and today we discuss the importance of ricing for Ojibwe communities today and during a mixed childhood. So I wonder if we could talk a little bit today about a seasonally appropriate topic, wild ricing. I noticed that this year we're a little behind where we usually are with ricing, and I wonder if we could talk a little bit about what you do to prepare to go ricing, how you're supposed to do things in a good way, things like that.
Yeah, it is ricing time right now, and a little bit late, I agree. A long time ago, they used to check out the lakes, probably in mid-August, and they would go to each lake, send out a party to each lake and check them out and see which one is going to be ripening first, because different lakes, different rivers, they ripen at different times. And
river rice kind of tends to ripen earlier, right?
Right, right. So they would send out their parties and check these rice beds out. And they would come back and report to the ricers, the village people, and say, hey, this lake's going to be good here probably in another week or two. You know, that one's not going to be ready for a while, you know. So they would probably go to the first lake first and move their camp over there. They used to camp at these lakes a long time ago. And then as they rice this out, maybe they would move to the next lake. Sometimes they would split up. But I remember a long time ago, we would go right out to the rice lake and camp. And there would be other people camping there. And I remember those old men used to go out and check it out in the morning, you know. And they would come back and they'd say, no, not yet. Of course, we'd be camping right by the lake. Each morning they'd do that. About 3 or 4 mornings they would go out there and pretty soon they'd say, okay, it's ready. And, man, everybody was ready. They had their canoes ready. They headed right out there. Miko guys, it's a good time to go to the Shinabig. And it's a good time to go to the Chayag. A community banig. Miko de Jigibi got to go to the Shiang. Kipabi tuang of Peter Bakako and the Gadigo. What Pigo gave Ishing in a Newman. This gang of community again, the Suyu shape could give up in the Moadi of a Newman. I got my shiggy, she gets a Newman. I mean, coming to mom now, but then they mean that you have been to more. I am a shit. And good thing so, I've been to more. Ha, musical, you keep singing, babe, Bob Newman, the kid, boozing. Mr. P, Bob Newman, the kid, you're in the Shinabig. No, go, we go, me go. It's about cock when you got a dig, the money go up here, it's a booze, so I bomb a Newman, the kid. Mingo, Skyag, that's key. Going up to the neighborhood, you can't see now, or Nungum or Square is a chicken, women, woman, the king. Going to Bobby to see my way in the Gishigan Indig. Nowadays, the younger generations don't wait for the rice to ripen, they think, because ricing is open at a given day, they used to go out there and start ricing.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot has changed since back in the 50s and 60s.
So when you were telling about it in Ojibwe, would they actually make a proclamation like, Menumineke da, Buzig? Would they actually, was it kind of a thing where it was like everybody gathered
yeah,
around?
Yeah, it was an exciting thing. You know, we had our tents along the lake shore there, ways from the lake, and they would go and check, and they said, it's not ready yet, you know. And boy, finally, when they felt it was ready, they were all excited, and they say, oh, how? Menumineke da, Buzig magaji morning. So. And they would go out and rice, and it was ready, and it was falling good.
Yeah, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but especially when I hear you tell that, I think in general in our society, we always say that, oh, we're so regulated as a society, not just Ojibwe's, but everybody. But I think that's one area where it was more regulated and for the better back then, because especially a year like this, what I've been noticing is people have it in their head, oh, ricing, Labor Day, I should be ricing. Well, very few places were ready to go on Labor Day, you know.
Right. And a lot of times, too, and I remember, and I said this earlier in one of the other shows we did, a lot of the elders back home used to have a good relationship with the game wardens that watched over the rice, and they would come and ask You know, these elderly gentlemen, you know, think the rice is ready. What do you think? And then by then, these gentlemen have been out checking the rice beds, and they say, well, this lake is not going to be ready yet, but that lake should be ready. Don't open it yet for another week anyway. So the game wardens would listen to these guys because, you know, these guys were the experts in the ricing. So, but, you know, like I said, now they just, okay, August 15th, ricing is open. Go ahead. Or August 20th or whatever. You know, they don't care if the rice is ripe or not. And that hurts the rice.
And would it be, too, they would kind of regulate certain spots in the lake? So, like, for example, today I was out. There were spots along the periphery where it was falling really good, but then there were spots where it was denser, more in the middle of the lake, and I was knocking some of that rice, but it wasn't falling good, so I went back, and I was like, I'm going to let this sit for a little bit longer. Would people kind of do that? Or
right, right. Yeah. You know, and then you know what, too? They had their own little areas that they respected each other's areas. They, you know, go through there and rice, and they'd see some other boats over there. Well, let's not go over there. Let's stick over here, you know. So they respected each other that way. And, yeah, there are parts that were thin, you know, and some parts where it wasn't falling very good. They'd stay away from there, you know, until the very last.
And I think that's something people don't have a sense of anymore. Some people obviously do, like, good ricers, but there's a lot of novice ricers. They just kind of plow through.
Exactly, know? Exactly.
So, yeah. If you're out there.
And then, you know, that there's not a... They don't talk to each other about the rice anymore, you know, because they just go out at any time, you know. A long time ago, like I said, these guys used to work together. Well, let's go to this lake first and take care of that one, you know, and the word would spread. That's not ready yet. Let's stay away from there, you know.
So how would it work as far as you remember, as far as families getting together and, you know, they go out to gather the rice and then would they just process it separately or would they go back and forth and kind of split the workload up?
No, they would go out and rice, you know, individual families would go out and rice, and they would all come back. You know, that first day, especially the first rice, they would come back and they would dry it out really good, and then they would build a fire, and then they would start processing it right away because your first rice, that first day, there's a feast, and that goes along with that. So they, you know, different families would get their rice together, and I mean, they'd get their rice all dried up, you know, and then they would process it. Individual families would do that. But then there was one certain feast, one set feast for everybody to bring a little bit of rice. And they come here and say, guys, it's chigayad. And he gave me no money, kayad, and gave me a shanabig. Well, yes, gotta go. The tum, he puts you out. He goes to do what the shamanomen, who amish go. He put away what you go, he could just say, No, he made me come out, me just a piece, go out, just keep in that coach, keep in that coach, do out of a nomen. When he made with your tards, he made with your tards, what am I? He was kebab, what? Me piggy, Kashamawad, no. My Jack, I want to toss in the gin. You know, along with that ceremony, too, when they'd get their first rice for the first day. Then they would feed the ones that have lost a family member, you know, and take care of that. So it would be good for them to go out ricing after that then. So everything was good back then. There was a lot of togetherness that they would communicate well together. And everybody respected everybody.
2 years ago was the bad year where people were having a hard time ricing. Was there things you remember, too, back then where, you know, maybe you took a year off of a certain place? Or
it's kind of funny. Sometimes you go out to a lake and it's plentiful, and then you go back there the next year, there's nothing there, you know, for whatever reason. I know us down south here a little ways, we used to rice a certain lake over there. And then for the past 6 or 7 years, there hasn't been any rice on that lake. Of course, there's a dam there, too. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, you know, if they regulate the water level that way or whatever. But, you know, it's funny. Like, last year, this one area didn't have any rice, and we went out and checked it this year, and it was full of rice.
Way back then, did they still bind rice, or was that something that was way earlier?
You know, I've never seen that done. I've never seen them do that. Maybe that was before my time. I know I saw some pictures of people that did that, and for whatever reason, I don't know why that was. But in my day, you know, like growing up in the 50s, I never saw them. I never seen them do that. Mm-hmm. Everybody just went out and raced.
And then, too, would they, you know, being a kid, they ever prepared a certain way? Like, I can't think of the word, but got pizzagun? They ever, like,
oh, they used to do race? That, too, yeah. Right? And, I never did care for it. I wanted to get right to the rice. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get right at the rice, man. I'm a rice eater. you know, I grew up on rice and potatoes and deer meat and fish. I didn't mess with got pizzagun or anything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, other my cousins did, you know. My other part of my family used to, mm-hmm. but I never did care for that.
And how about, like, the kind of learning process with that stuff? Was there a point where they said, okay, now you're going to learn how to do this and do it the right way so that, you know, you're not wasting or anything? I guess put you in training, if you will, or...
Yeah, we of course, we're lectured to all the time, you know, before we'd go racing. We're always, you know, before we might have been 10 years old, and they would tell us, you know, how to race, you know, or tell us somebody tipped over and they say, you know, he shouldn't have did this or they shouldn't have did that, you know. So, and by the time you're 11, 12 years old, you know, if you're big enough, they put you to the test. And I mean, when they put you to the test, you had to be good because my mom, she was a very heavy set lady. And when she got in that canoe, I think I was about 13 or 14. I was darn careful not to tip that boat.
Mm-hmm. And you were polling, right?
I was polling, so you learn very quickly, you know. And, of course, the more experienced ricers will tell you how to go through the rice, you know, mm-hmm. and where to turn around. Don't turn around in the middle of the rice. Go to the open area and go in straight or go along the shape of the lake or the shape of the rice, how it's growing, you know. Just go along that way and make paths, you know. So, yeah, we were lectured to. We were taught.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Likewise with the processing, like what was your guys' role as like younger kids then? Did you, because you guys obviously didn't have machines out there, right?
No, we didn't. I mean, everything was done by hand.
Yep.
Ours was to take care of, clean the rice and kind of rake it and carry it over to the kettle and these kind of things. Sometimes winnowing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We were taught all those things by step. And my dad taught me how to jig the rice.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned how to do that, but that was a job I really didn't care for, but I had to do it, you know, because it was hard, it was tedious.
So but machines are good, in other words, in that sense, to at least do that step of it?
It's yeah, but even some of the machines, you know, I've heard a lot of complaints that they break up the rice, you know, mm-hmm. if they're doing it at the wrong speed or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so we still do it the old-fashioned way.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yeah. I know it's down at the grounds or where I work, and when we have people come in, we make them do it the old-fashioned way, you know. So.
You know, what's funny I notice is that you see a lot of rice that's for sale, and a lot of people, and I think this has to do with a lot of people that go ricing and they don't really know how to rice, because one of the things they're doing is just handing it off to somebody who, you know, does it professionally, but, you know, it's part of what they do is they process rice. And they just hand it off and they get a certain amount of rice back. But the thing I noticed with that rice is those people that process it, they leave it in the machine like a long time, which means, you know, when you get it back, there's nothing there. There's no like husk or anything, right, or anything like right. that. But it's gray. But it's in there so long it strips off some of the right. outside.
Right. You know, that's the other thing too, is some of these people they have their machines and you take it over to them and you have them process it for you. Well, I'll do this, but I want half the rice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a lot of rice. They're making a lot of rice. Or some guys will say, I'll take a third, or I'll take a fourth, mm-hmm. or, you know, a little bit, you know, or I'll charge you 25 or 30 bucks or whatever, you know. And that's because some of the people don't know how to jig on that rice or do it the old-fashioned way, or some people are too, it's too much work for them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to do that, so they take it to the rice processor.
Well, I think that's the thing. You know, people go out and they're like, because I see this a lot with, like, students, and they're like, oh, I want to go ricing. And, you know, they go ricing. They're like, oh, that was fun. There's a few worms, but that was fun. And they think that's it. And that's a quarter of it.
That's the easiest part, going out there and knock it into the boat. But mm-hmm. When you got to take all the time to process it right, you know, that's the work right there.
Mm-hmm. And I kind of wonder, too, with those processors, like, I don't know if I'd trust people. You know, like, give me back. Because how do you know it's your rice? You know,
exactly.
It's like...
exactly. Well, see, that's a chance you got to take. That's a chance you got to take.
Yep. So,
you know, unless you know the guy really well, you know, or stand there and watch him, you know. Well, you almost have to.
Yeah.
Don't leave your rice over and say, I'll come back Tuesday and pick it up. I mean, you know, might not be your rice you're getting back.
And then, too, I wonder, because I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was telling me, oh, I leave my rice in it. Well, he left it in his car. Like, he let it dry, you know, for a few days, and he left it in his car. You know, and he's like, oh, I take it all into the processor all at once, like 2 weeks later. I mean, is that something you'd...
Nah, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you took it off the lake and then just left it in the sack and waited 2 weeks, it'll get moldy, you know, and it'll start to open up in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you leave it in there too long. It gets a little bit of damp. I know I had a couple of sacks of rice one time, and I put one sack outside, and I went in and I started doing something else, and I forgot my rice out there. Well, it rained that evening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I brought it in the next day without drying it. I put it in the basement, and pretty soon when I opened it up, it was like popcorn.
Yeah.
You know, so I ruined a lot of rice that way.
And it's amazing how fast it heats up, too. It gets really
exactly.
hot. So.
Right.
So would they, but even laying it out, even if like you put it in your garage and it's laid out, I mean, would you recommend like any more than like a certain amount of days that it sits out? Even if it's not getting moldy, just if it's sitting there, is that a good thing? Or?
Well, right, as we speak right now in our garage at work, we still have rice that was picked off the lake last week and has been drying good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's inside our garage.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ventilation there, and we got the fans going, and you know, nothing's going to happen to it.
Mm-hmm. You know. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunida, a program of Ojibwe culture. Our guest today is Larry Mick Smallwood, a language instructor at the University of Minnesota Duluth. He is the director of language and culture for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and is also a contributing voice to the Ojibwe People's Dictionary, an online resource created by the University of Minnesota. Today our topic is wild rice and Ojibwe community. When we go out to rice, how do we start off so we're making sure we're doing things in a good, respectful way?
Me a pony is chicken on the shanabe, been dakun on the mother doing way name, way my mood, you, my nomen, you got kittigard and I'm gonna do. Been dakun on, I'm gonna be great to on, I'm gonna do. You, we my mooing, you, my nomen. No, I gave away any to buy, I'm gonna go. There's your way with snook, you, G man, Marsha gave, we had to get jibbies of sigma, G maning, to keep on our bow it. Me on, you been dakun, I'm gonna do. We get no better on kin on good day when I do and muggies like eggening a yog when I do. Can you end the gig? Me and you be on Banduk, Bandakun and Giga. Can I go? We always offer our sacred tobacco when we go ricing into the water, thanking the Creator for the rice that we're about to pick. We say thank you for that, and also the Creator has spirits that watch over us. And there are water spirits. Hmm. So we give an offering to the water spirits also, and that we may be safe out in that lake. Nobody fall in and drowned or tipped the boat over or whatever. Although people do tip over, you know. So you just got to be careful and have respect for that water and that rice.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about green rice. Like, why does certain rice get green? Is it the lake? Is it the length of time in which you parch it up? Or
I think the sooner you get it off the lake, the greener it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you get it off the lake right now, you know, and 20 minutes later you're drying it out and you're finishing it all up within a couple hours or something, I think it's green.
Yeah.
I might be wrong, but I think that's the way it goes, because the longer your rice sits, you know, the darker it gets, I think.
And what's your kind of take, or like growing up, what was people's take on that green rice? Was that something they kind of sought out more? Or?
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, it's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see that too much anymore.
And I find this too, like, you know, it's starting to pile up. Like, I processed or I parched up the stuff that I got this weekend. But, you know, you think that's because, like, this thing where people kind of have busy schedules.
By the time you process it this weekend, it's going to be dark.
Yep.
I'm sure that's what it is.
Yeah.
But that green rice is really good. Mm-hmm. Cooked properly. I see a lot of rice today cooked different ways it gets wasted. Mm-hmm. Some of it is almost mushy and dry. And of course, nowadays, your modern Indian's putting all kinds of different things in there. He's putting celery in there, almonds, all the stuff, you know. Us older natives, we don't eat like that.
So what's your preferred kind of way to...
I like it just plain with salt. Maybe I'll put butter in there or bacon grease.
Right.
That's the way I eat mine.
But not even plain. Like just chopped up bacon like you see people do? Or...
Oh, that's... Well, I'm an expert on that. Because I take my bacon and I fry it crisp, you know, but I cut it up in 1-inch pieces, the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
I fry it crisp, and after I drain my rice, I take that pan full of bacon bits and all the grease, and I dump everything right into that rice, and I stir it up. But mm-hmm. it's got to be crisp, because if you put the half-cooked bacon in there, when you get in the rice, it's going to be all soggy.
Yeah.
You know?
And you see that a lot, too.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's kind of... Yeah. I mean, it's good, but it's kind of... You got this raw piece of pork.
It's not even good. It's got to be crisp. My, it's good.
Hmm.
Probably 1,000 ladies out there have been telling me, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But we all have our own different taste buds, I mean, you know. But the waste of the rice is what really bothers me. You know, I mentioned this before.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those old people saying, you know, if you waste rice and disrespect the rice, pretty soon there's going to be no more rice. It's going to be taken from you. And I saw that a few years ago with all these floods. Mm-hmm. Because I saw at powwows, people throwing rice away in the garbage cans because some outside organization had cooked it and they put all kinds of stuff in there that we're not accustomed to eating. People didn't like it, so they were throwing it away. I mean, even I threw mine away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that next year was when all them rains came and
mm-hmm.
we were almost without rice there for a couple of years. And it's slowly coming back. So we have to respect that. Manaduga gave me to go down to Manum, and the Creator gave us that rice to eat. We should respect it.
Mm-hmm.
So our buffets, too, you know, they make these big pans of rice and put all the different things in there, and then when the buffets close, you know, they can't serve it the next day, so what do? They dump it out.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's just a different mentality people should have about the rest of the food that we get from Walmart that's kind of industrialized? I mean, maybe it's not okay to throw away any food, but, you know, to maybe think about rice differently.
Especially rice, because it's a spiritual food. Manaduga gave me to go down, the Creator gave that to us. Mm-hmm. It's like the berries and the rice and the deer meat. We mm-hmm. don't waste any of that fish. We have to take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they used to do that. when he was cooking, even if they dropped some rice from the rice container to the kettle, you know, if they dropped some rice, they would pick that up and clean that up carefully and cook it. They didn't sweep it up and throw it in the garbage. Mm. That's how respectful they were of that rice. So, I had to go to Nick because you can't come on, man. We end up going to go down. Can I get go in and can to see and take your pippers and dog on you and get to see what marriage I got piece of chigayot. So I'm just remembering some of the things my elders told me and about respecting everything, the rice, the deer meat, all the things that we eat, the berries and the fish, to respect those. And try to carry that on to this day as little as I can. Mm-hmm. So respect it all. Everything came from the Creator.
That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our guest, Larry Amick Smallwood, for sharing his stories with us. This is Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunida. I'm your host, Eric Reddix. To listen again to past episodes of the program, visit the KUMD website at kumd.org and click on Audio Archives. Ojibwe Stories, Gaganunida is produced by KUMD and by the Department of American Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota Duluth, home of the Master of Tribal Administration and Governance, or MTAG, program, where students learn about leadership, law, sovereignty, and management from a tribal perspective. MTAG was designed by tribes for tribes. More information at umdmtag.org. Funding for Ojibwe Stories Gaganunida is provided in part by the UMD College of Education and Human Service Professions and by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Hey, 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 hey.